case here today, which is case number 70583, Wynn Las Vegas LLC versus O'Connell. We have Mr. Semenza representing the appellant, Ms. Morris representing the respondent. As you can see, we have five of us here today. Justice Stiglitz will be participating in the case. She will listen to the oral argument. Justice Silver cannot participate because she heard this case as a member of the Court of Appeals, so she has to recuse from participation. So it will be a six-justice court will consider this case after the oral argument. So, Mr. Semenza, if you want to proceed, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal? Yes, please. Okay, you may do so.
Good morning, Justices. My name is L.J. Semenza. I represent the appellant and cross-respondent Wynn Las Vegas LLC relating to the petition for rehearing that the court is hearing today. This is a premises liability case that involved a slip and fall in February of 2010. Ms. O'Connell was walking through the atrium area of the Wynn when she slipped and fell on a liquid substance. Ms. O'Connell declined medical attention at the time, remained on the property for a considerable amount of time, and continued to gamble at the property. Thereafter, Ms. O'Connell left the Wynn, went to a different casino, continued to gamble for the remainder of the evening, and ultimately went home. Ms. O'Connell followed up a couple days later with some medical treatment where she was diagnosed with some contusions to her right side, essentially some bruising. Thereafter, Ms. O'Connell began seeing a myriad of other physicians, medical providers, and claimed a whole host of other ailments, and ultimately the lawsuit followed. The issue before the court today relates to whether Ms. O'Connell has met her burden in establishing that Wynn Las Vegas had constructive notice of the hazardous condition that was present on the floor in its atrium area.
Let me ask you a question just right out of the chute.
Yes, Ron.
Isn't that a very fact-bound determination? And didn't the jury hear everything you just explained to us? And I understand you don't like the verdict, but that's what the jury came back with. And they heard all those factors pertaining to notice. The liquid was described, and so tell me where there's a deficit there.
And, Your Honor, to begin with, the Supreme Court has defined and enunciated sort of the constructive notice standard at present based upon the mode of operation rule. And it's obviously our position that the mode of operation rule, given the facts of this particular case, don't apply here.
But then again, the facts also indicate there were no maintenance logs, there was no investigation process in that particular area, right?
I do believe that there weren't sweep logs. However, obviously, based upon the facts that were presented, there were porters that scoured the area, that walked through the area, that do clean the area from time to time. The specific time frame by which those porters walked through was never established at trial. But yes, there is maintenance, there is observation, there is cleanup relating to that particular area and throughout the Wynn's property. With regard to the facts that were presented to the jury, those facts don't establish that the Wynn should have known about this hazardous condition at all. There is no evidence in the record to suggest how long that substance was present on the floor prior to Ms. O'Connell's fall.
But that's not strictly true, because her testimony was that it was partially dried and there were footprints on it, and that it was a sizable puddle.
Right, and
wasn't it considered like honey or something? Wasn't a Wynn employee described it as some substance like honey on the floor?
We don't know what the substance ultimately was, given that the testimony was that it was somehow colored or green. Might infer that it somehow wasn't water, but we don't know what that substance was. And Ms. O'Connell,
but to answer the question, I mean, you said a moment ago there was nothing to say how long it had been there, but that's, I want to examine that point, because I think a liquid substance that a witness says was partially dried and had dirty footprints in it that had been, that implied that it was somewhat dry when they walked in it, because clear water would not hold a footprint. I mean, why is that not enough for her to make her burden that that had been there for some time?
The size of the spill doesn't indicate how long it was there. The color of the substance doesn't indicate how long it was there. The fact that there were footprints, similarly, doesn't indicate how long the substance ultimately was there. Those footprints theoretically could have been Ms. O'Connell's. Those footprints theoretically could have been an individual that had walked through the area only 10 or 15 seconds before Ms. O'Connell.
That's your defense on that. What about it, the fact that it was partially dry?
Well, that's Ms. O'Connell's statement, that she believed, ultimately, it was drying. She doesn't have any expertise. That was pure speculation on her part.
Does she need to be an expert to know that something was dry?
I do think that that is outside the realm of common knowledge, and I do believe that an expert would be required to come in and opine as to here's how long substances take to dry, whether it be
water. How is an expert, if they don't know what the substance is, how's an expert going to come in and make an investigation to determine how long it was there? I mean, again, I'm going back to this jury. This jury heard all of this, and they made a determination.
They did find the plaintiff was partially responsible by her own negligence, did they not?
They did, 40% at fault. That's correct. And I think Judge Tao, obviously, we have the benefit of his dissent in the order of affirmance, and he posed a whole host of questions that weren't answered, obviously, at the trial. Who dropped the substance on the ground? Why was the substance on the ground? How long the substance had been on the ground?
All of those questions you argued to the jury, right?
We did, but in this particular case, it is Ms. O'Connell's burden to establish.
So we're on appellate review. I'm not even sure why we have this case in the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeals heard it, but we're here. What's the legal proposition you're asking this court to adopt? We're not an error correction court. That's what the Court of Appeals is all about. So it seems to me arguing about what the jury decided or didn't decide is not the role of the Supreme Court. We should be addressing what are the legal questions. So what's the legal principle you would ask the Supreme Court to address today?
I think there's two. First is the mode of operation rule the only basis to establish constructive notice on the part of a landowner? And that's obviously something that the Supreme Court is going to have to decide. If the court determines that constructive notice goes beyond the mode of operation rule, then the Supreme Court needs to determine the scope of that particular standard. And our conclusion is, obviously, that the evidence presented is insufficient to go to the jury on that particular issue.
Before we get to that, let's go to the legal principle. Why isn't Sprague adequate to address the legal principle governing this case? Are you asking us to revisit Sprague? Are you asking us to clarify it? Are you asking us to expand it? Is there some other case law that you want us to adopt? I just don't see that here.
Your Honor, I think that there needs to be some sort of clarification as far as whether the mode of operation rule is the exclusive mechanism by which to establish constructive notice in these types of cases.
Okay, so on a clean slate, how would you write the opinion, Mr. Spence? I'm sincerely interested in that. I mean, if we're going to hear this case as a Supreme Court and enunciate some law, how would you formulate the opinion? Would you state it in terms of clarifying Semenza? I'm sorry for not giving you a chance to answer. I asked a question. You didn't even get a chance.
That's fine, Your Honor. I do think it would be in the form of a clarification. And I think the facts of this case are such that, essentially, there's no evidence to suggest, in this case, that Wynn created the hazardous substance. That's not an issue. There's no evidence to suggest that Wynn had actual notice of the substance at issue. That's not at issue. So the issue here is a small one as far as whether Ms. O'Connell can establish that Wynn should have known about the hazardous substance, either based upon the mode of operation rule, or if the Supreme Court determines that there is a more general standard, as it appears the Court of Appeals advocated for by asserting that you have to look at the specific circumstances of each particular case. Obviously, that's up to the Supreme Court whether it's going to go that far to provide such a standard. But our position is, under any standard, Ms. O'Connell hasn't met her burden to establish that Wynn should have known. And I believe, as Judge Tao had indicated, there has to be some evidence of how long that substance was present on the ground in order for a jury to find that the Wynn could be constructively on notice.
So, Mr. Simmons, obviously, there doesn't have to be direct evidence, right? We instruct the jury in every trial that circumstantial evidence is just as good as direct evidence. So aren't all the and Ms. O'Connell may not be an expert, but her testimony is evidence. She testified about what she saw, how it appeared, part of it was dry. In all of that evidence that the jury was entitled to consider to evaluate under the jury instructions whether there is constructive notice or not.
I think that, you know, obviously it's Wynn's position that the evidence that Ms. O'Connell presented is insufficient. The fact that she said, well, there were, you know, it looked like it was drying, that cannot, I mean, that's pure guesswork. She's simply assuming that to be the case. And when I questioned her at trial relating to that, I specifically asked her, well, how many minutes does it take this type of substance to dry? And her response was, I don't know.
So is this an evidentiary issue? I mean, did you object that it's an improper lay opinion?
I don't know that I specifically did at the time. I'm not sure. But ultimately, I think that it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, the court has to take the facts of what was presented at trial and determine whether it meets the standard, whether it be the mode of operation rule, or a more expansive standard or more generalized standard relating to constructive notice.
Mr. Simmons, did you want to reserve the balance of your
yes,
time?
Thank you.
Also, I just had one observation, too, on the Court of Appeals. When the court grants review, it vacates the decision of the Court of Appeals, so it becomes a nullity at that stage. Nothing against them. I mean, we appreciate all the three judges' hard work on these cases, but we just review it de novo and just consider as if the Court of Appeals didn't participate.
Of course not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Morris?
Good morning, Your Honors. Christian Morris for the respondent, Yvonne O'Connell. Since the 1960s, Nevada has been a reasonable care-based approach. And the issue of constructive notice is an issue for the jury, looking at the circumstances of the case, whether they believe the business owner exercised reasonable care to provide a safe environment for patrons that come in. When looking at the facts of this case, these are the facts that were presented to the jury in this case. The scene, it was Super Bowl weekend, it was a busy weekend. This is a high traffic area. It is by the entrance to the casino. To the left are shops when you enter, to the right is to the casino, to the end is the Parasol Bar. This is a beautiful area, it's the atrium. Flowers to look at. There's also the beautiful mosaic tile. And it's testified that people are allowed to carry through alcoholic beverages, that there are families that come through with children that are carrying things. And it is an area where they have, they believe, a porter. However, at trial, they were not able to provide any evidence whatsoever as to who was assigned to that area, whether it was one porter or whether it was two porters. They did not provide any evidence that they keep any sweep logs. They were not able to provide any evidence as to when the area was last inspected.
You actually called the representatives of the Wynn in your case in chief, correct?
That is correct. So in my case in chief, I called Yannette Elias, who was in charge of ensuring the porters in that area kept the area clean. Now, Yannette Elias said that they do walk around as supervisors to ensure that the porters are doing their jobs, but they don't have a set schedule for that either. But the one piece of evidence that they can find that a porter is not doing their job is that if there is debris on the floor. And in this case, there was something on the floor, evidence that a porter was not doing their job. Now, Yannette Elias is also the one who testified a bit about the honey. But in her deposition and in her written statement, she said it was a spill. And she testified like a drink. At trial, her testimony changed. At trial, she said she didn't recall whether she ever actually saw it. She never touched it. She said she never even, she thinks maybe when the sweeper moved, she saw something. So for her to testify even to whether it was sticky or like a honey, her trial transcript didn't say anything at all about whether she'd ever touched it. For someone to look at something, can't remember if they actually saw it, doesn't know when it was cleaned up, but to testify as to the type of substance it is without even being able to touch it, which was her testimony, was information that the jury heard and compared to her deposition testimony where she said it was like a spill, and her written statement that she submitted to Corey Prowell, another person that I called in my case in chief. He was a security officer. He wrote down, she reported to him that there was a spill and that she called someone to clean that spill up. She also testified that it was impossible with the staffing levels at that time to keep the casino area clean. Now, all of that is evidence that was presented to the jury on the reasonableness of the actions of Wynn. Then on top of that, we had the testimony of Yvonne O'Connell. She testified it was a 7-foot spill, and that 3 feet of it was dry, or almost dry, is exactly what she said. So is it possible for a 7-foot spill to be there for only just a few minutes and allow 3 feet of it to then become dry, become sticky, and accumulate footprints? The common experience of the person, the people on the jury, is that it had been there for such a period of time that a reasonable business owner would have discovered it and been able to clean it up.
Was there any evidence submitted by either side about the last time that particular spot was inspected, just to determine when it, at least a baseline, when it was clean?
And that was exactly the question I asked, and the answer was no. They have no evidence as to when it was last inspected. Very clear questions were asked. When was it last inspected? Who last inspected it? And they had no evidence to it whatsoever.
And you said people walked through there with alcoholic beverages and stuff? So.
Correct. The Parasol Bar is at the end. Trish Mathau, who's the claims administrator, and Yannette Elias testified that customers are allowed to walk through with alcoholic beverages. And Yannette Elias offered up that families come through with children all the time who are carrying things.
Thank you.
Was there any objection that your client's testimony was inappropriate lay opinion testimony?
Absolutely not. No objection was made at trial when she testified as to the substance, whether it was wet, whether it was sticky, any of those things. There was no challenges.
But it's my understanding there's no video surveillance or anything of what actually happened, when the spill happened, how your client fell, or any of that.
That's correct. It was very clear that no video surveillance was available. Now, the spill was cleaned up before they ever took any pictures of it. So what we have is circumstantial evidence in this case. This is a clean, constructive notice. Was it there long enough that a reasonable jury could infer that it should have been found and either cleaned or warned by them? A straight, constructive notice case based on circumstantial evidence. And that's exactly what was presented to the jury. The proposition by the defendants is there is no evidence, but there was sufficient evidence, and the jury was reasonable in making the inferences they did and coming to the decision that they did in the case.
So counsel's correct in that we still don't know what it was, correct?
Correct.
We don't know exactly how long it was there.
That's correct, but it was a foreign substance, and that's what the law says. A foreign substance, the existence of it, is contrary that reasonable care is being taken. But then we have to say, okay, well, they don't, you know, the business owner doesn't immediately have responsibility. They either have created it, have actual knowledge, or constructive knowledge. And so what we have is a foreign substance, and that's exactly what she testified to. It was a foreign substance that was a greenish-colored liquid, and that is exactly what we have. We have nothing more than that, but we don't need that. That's sufficient evidence for the jury to be able to determine what it was, basically the foreign substance, that it was a liquid, as the plaintiff testified to. And the other evidence that was presented from Yannette Elias saying it was a spill, that a sweeper was put over a large portion of it. It was a large sweeper which was put over 3 portions of it, which was the dried area. There wasn't any evidence whatsoever that actually contradicted what Yvonne O'Connell testified to at trial.
And in terms of the legal principles that apply, Wynn is, asserting that Sprague limits the circumstances under which we can find constructive notice. So how do you respond, and what do you think Sprague means?
That's not how I interpret Sprague. I interpret Sprague to be a slight expansion on the standard constructive notice. In Sprague, it was an issue, well, they didn't quite have constructive notice in that they should have known, but they actually did because they knew this was something that consistently happened in that produce area, and therefore they should have kept done more than just the sweeping in order to keep those rakes up off the floor. So I don't believe that Sprague narrows constructive notice. I believe it was an expansion on the traditional constructive notice. And mode of operation was not the argument that was made at trial. It was constructive notice based on the circumstances of this case, based on the type of the liquid, the dried area, and the actions of the defendant.
I have this wasn't in the petition for review, but jury instruction 27 was given, and it states pretty much what I understand to be the law, and there was no objection to it. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, we did craft that jury instruction based on the understandings of the case law from the 1960s forward as to actual and constructive.
Perspective. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No.
There was no objection from your colleague, your opposing counsel, on jury instruction 27.
That's
so
correct.
That is the law of this case.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any more? I can continue on if I have more time.
You have 6.5 minutes. You can use all of it or none of it, whatever you choose.
I think actually if you don't have any further questions for me, I think that I will rest.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Semezi, you have about 4 minutes left. And
thank you again. In hearing from opposing counsel, I think in reality the parties are largely in agreement as to what evidence was presented, what offers of proof relating to constructive notice there were at trial. And also hearing from opposing counsel, I think that in her acknowledgement that the pertinent issue is how long that substance ultimately was on the ground, and that's the determining factor if we look at an expanded standard as far as whether Wynn should have known about this hazardous substance. And so in that respect, I think the issues are quite clear. Our position ultimately is that based upon what Ms. O'Connell testified to and her description of what was on the ground is not sufficient as a matter of law to establish constructive notice in this particular case.
Let me just pause you there. I want to confirm again what I confirmed with her, which is you didn't object to jury instruction number 27.
That's correct. I don't believe I did in reviewing the transcript.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. However, it doesn't, whether I had objected or not, it regardless, it is still the duty of the district court to appropriately inform prospective jurors or the jurors about the state of the law and what the law ultimately is. So the fact that there was no objection to that jury instruction, I don't think changes the analysis at all as far as whether Ms. O'Connell...
Can I address you on that point?
Yes, of course.
Looking at instruction 27, what should the district court have changed sua sponte in the instruction? Do you have it there in front of you?
I don't have it here in front of me, oh. Your Honor. But
so are you suggesting this... Even though you didn't object, you seem to be arguing that the district court erroneously instructed the jury. So I'm trying to figure out what is it about this instruction that's wrong. I didn't see that in your brief.
In my review of the particular...
Did you put that in your brief?
Pardon me?
Did you articulate in the brief what was wrong with instruction 27?
No, I don't believe we did, Your Honor. I think in looking at instruction 27, I think... Instruction 27 was a general statement concerning the broad applicability of constructive notice and how it applies, and basically that more general standard. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, there was some reference to the mode of operation in the instruction. I may be wrong about
Let
that.
Let me help you out here. What Thank it you. Says, and I won't read the whole of it, but the sentence I'm focused on is in the paragraph about constructive notice. And the jury instruction after identifying that concept says, that means that the defendant, using reasonable care, should have known of the unsafe condition in time to have taken steps to correct the condition or to take other suitable precautions. And then it continues, you may consider whether the defendant inspected the premises on a reasonable basis or in a reasonable way in determining whether the defendant should have known of the unsafe condition. You may consider the length of time the condition may have existed in determining whether the defendant knew or should have known. So we're here to, and I share Justice Hardesty's concern, we're here to look at legal principles and try to understand how they apply here. And I think that's a correct statement of the law, but I also think it is very difficult for you because there are sufficient facts to come under that instruction for the jury to find.
Well, again, Your Honor, I come back to this notion that there has to be some evidence, and I don't believe that it's present, as to how long that substance was present on the ground. And the facts that Ms. O'Connell has identified, the evidence that she purports to offer on that particular issue, isn't evidence at all. And the fact is that...
Well, but it is evidence. Why is it not evidence?
Because I don't think that it ultimately goes to the issue of how long that substance was present. And I go back to my previous comments about how big that spill is not indicative of how long it sat there for. The color isn't indicative, whether it's sticky or not. If the substance
it's large, perhaps if there's an employee in the area, they would have noticed it, though.
And that may very well be true, but it doesn't change the analysis as far as it could have been there 10 seconds before, or it could have been there 5 minutes before.
So if I can clarify, you're not disputing the legal principle stated in the jury instruction. You're just saying there wasn't sufficient evidence to meet it?
Well, no, I am, in the sense that the Supreme Court precedent to this point has been limited to the mode of operation rule in Sprague. And so may I finish, Your Honor?
Yes.
And so to the extent that the Supreme Court decides to expand that principle to a more generalized standard, then Ms. O'Connell has not met her burden in that regard.
But this jury instruction already expands that, and you agreed to it.
I did, Your Honor. But I think that the district court has an obligation, the Supreme Court has an obligation to correctly identify the law, and I do believe that there is an absence of a specific Supreme Court opinion on this particular issue as far as the scope of constructive knowledge.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Semenza. Ms. Morris, thank you for your excellent arguments and briefs, and we will take this case under submission.